Welcome everyone. We are continuing our series of going through chapter by chapter in my new book, The Three Principles of Oneness, how embodying the cosmic perspective can liberate your life. So tonight we continue with chapter 8. Now this chapter is where I actually talk about the three principles of oneness. And some folks have asked me, why is this chapter so short? And that's because the rest of the book is sort of giving you the thesis of why oneness and how these three principles act in our life. But I wanted to keep this chapter short so that the person could use this to meditate upon. So short passages where they could just sort of take it in and sort of sit with it. The reading tonight is from two different folks. The first is from Thich Nhat Hanh. One included all, and all were contained in one. The second reading tonight is from Robert Plant. And this is from a song that he named All the King's Horses. Swift and true, straight to my heart, love has come calling, and I'm back here again. I pour myself a brand new start, glad to be falling for the beauty within. All the King's Horses. All the King's men. I'm on the outside looking in over and over and over again. There's no telling where I've been, how I returned here, how much I have seen. All the King's Horses, all the King's men. I'll weave a circle around the sun, throw down my arms and give my all. I'll be your soldier of love. So as we said before, last week when we were talking about the first principle, each of these principles has to meet the needs that human beings have. And the two most important ones, I believe, are the existential and the essential. The existential comes from that place where we don't know. We find ourselves here, in this place, in this time. We want to know the answers, but often ultimate answers are not available. The existential is awakening to the freedom to choose what our life will mean, to choose how we will live, in the face of ultimate uncertainty. And secondly, the essential. And for many years, those two became separate in most of our main religions. But I believe that we have to bring the essential back into contact with the existential. And we can do that. We can do that through the knowledge that we've gained about our universe. And so the essential is going to point to those things that we can actually bear witness to. So I'm going to read to you just the line that kind of describes the second principle. From the delusion of separation, the universe is impermanent and transient. From the spaciousness of oneness, the universe is an endless opportunity for creative change. One of the things that we realize when we honestly look at the universe is that change is a constant. And that this change is something that is constantly working. However, when you work with people like I do, you find that change is often an unwelcome guest. We joke about lines like those from Mark Twain when commenting about New England weather. He said, if you don't like the weather in New England, just wait for a minute, it will change. Change is often perceived as an enemy because we often don't like change. Change is something that seems to be almost a side effect for this unconscious drive towards some sort of delusional perfection. And either we're constantly trying to change to become something else, to be somewhere else, to be someone else, or we get to some semblance of what we think is just right, and then change comes along. And now we have to try to shore up and gird up our loins to protect us against the change that would take away that sense of stability. So what do we do with it? Well, as I said, the second principle of oneness, the thing that we can awaken to, what the universe can tell us through observation, is that change is actually something that is the very nature of our universe. You might say that change is the way within which the universe creates. And probably the greatest expression of this is evolution. So that without change, without this constant change, nothing new could come into being. And there's one thing you can say about the universe just by observing it. If you talk about one quality that it might have, it's change. So how do we deal with this existentially? Well, when we look at the transient and contingent nature of existence, existentially what it can do, if we allow it, is it can provide clarity. And this clarity allows us to look at things differently. One of the things it does is it allows us to appreciate this precious, fragile life. We get so caught up in goals and looking for something new that we kind of lose our ability to embrace this moment, to embrace this day. We find ourselves living in the past or living in the future. And the beauty of the moment, the beauty of what's around us, seems evanescent. But we can learn from this existential point of view, we can decide that we are going to live differently, that we're going to allow that transient, contingent nature to spur us to a new way of being, a new way of enjoying and living, so that we learn to work with change as a catalyst for creativity in our own lives. And when we look at the essential aspect that this second principle provides, we realize that change is constant in a particular way. Now in science, we call it entropy. And it deals with the laws of thermodynamics, which is the idea that energy is constantly going through transformation. And entropy is that change where things fall apart, you know, It's like David Byrne said in the Talking Heads, things fall apart. It's scientific. But that energy is not lost. That energy continues. And even though it goes through many different manifestations, the energy stays the same. And as many of you have heard me speak before, I think the example in the physical world that we can talk about is water. That water can take many shapes and forms. It can be a solid, it can be a liquid, it can be a gas. And while it goes through all these transmutations, the essential molecules of that water are the same. You heard me last week talk about that, how the water in my Pepsi could once have been drunk by a T-Rex. T-Rex. But you see, that's the power we have as humans. We have imagination. We have the ability to understand these things and bring them into our life. That's the purpose of these principles. Even the, and someone once said to me, well, Arthur, I remember when I was giving this talk one time, and there were some scientists in the audience, which I always love. And they said, well, Sensei, there is a thing in physics we call physical constants. Einstein based many of his theories on it. Well, unfortunately, Einstein may have been wrong. The newest information, the newest knowledge we have is that even these physical constants may not actually be constants. They may actually change. And it may all depend on where you are in and what universe. Where you're in or where you're at in the universe and what universe you're in. That the laws of physics themselves are not immutable. But I think this understanding that we get from the laws of thermodynamics can be helpful in our personal lives. Because the question is, and this is the question that I think it begs, why do we resist change? I mentioned earlier the existential reason that, you know, perhaps it's because, you know, we want things to sort of stay the same if they're good. If they're bad, we want them to change quickly. Like the current crisis that we're in, we're all hoping that that change will happen soon. Where things will not be so dangerous. But here's what I think. I think just like the laws of thermodynamics, we have a sort of gnosis, a sort of knowing. We don't deal with it all the time, but it's the rub. And I think it has to do with death. I think one of the hardest things about being a self-conscious creature is knowing that you will die. In Buddhism, we call it the great change. And it's going to happen to all of us. Not a matter of if, but when. How. And like Woody Allen, I'm okay with death. I just don't want to be there when it happens. But I do think that's what's going on inside of us. I think there's a part of us that recognizes death as the great change. And yet, there's something, some kind of gnosis, some kind of intuition that tells us that this is not all there is. That tells us that somehow there must be something, just like the water molecule, that goes through all these different transformations and all these different changes, and yet the molecules remain. And I think somehow we have that within us, that we know that both things are true at the same time. That the great change that we call death is inevitable, and there is something that transcends that. And I've had these conversations with people who, for one reason or another, have come to the conclusion that this is it. And they have great fear. If you ask them what their biggest fear is, if they're, you know, be honest with you, they'll tell you they just can't fathom not existing. But why do you think that's so? Because we don't know what non-existence is. All we know is existence. All we know is the existential. We don't know what non-existent is. We're like children. When they're very little, they love to play peekaboo. Because when they can't see you anymore, you're gone. And I think that's how it is for us. We're like children playing some kind of cosmic peekaboo. And when we can't see you anymore, we think you've gone. And so we don't know what non-existence even means. We can't even develop a really rational, lucid explanation. Certainly we can't point to science, the laws of thermodynamics. So I think that's the conflict that's within us. I think the conflict is there's a knowing that things are changing, and there's big changes. And on the other hand, there's a sense that there's something more, you know, that somehow the finite and the infinite, the temporal and the eternal are not two, but one. And what the second principle of oneness calls us to is to bring both of those into our lives as one, not two. And to me, that's magical. It's magical that as a human being, I can time travel. I can go back into the past as if I was there again. And I can imagine the future as if I'm there again. One of my favorite tricks to do to myself, especially when I'm traveling a lot, is to sit in my chair by the fireplace and imagine myself in a future position. Like, you know, I'm going to be out west, or I'm going to be down in Florida. And I imagine myself sitting next to the pool in Florida, or out west, sitting, looking out at the mountains. And I really imagine it in detail, the smell of the water, the sun, the air, the warmth. And then when I get out there, or down there, I take a moment, in that moment, where I'm by the pool, or I'm looking at the mountain, and I bring those two together. It's magical. And it's the same. So I don't think we should bemoan the fact that we can do this. It's magical. But we have to bring both of those realities into our life. If we don't, what we end up doing with the existential is we begin to live wastefully. Because, you know, like the preacher in Ecclesiastes said, everything is vain. Let us drink and be merry, for tomorrow we die. So we live wastefully. Or we get so caught up in what we hope is going to come next, well, that doesn't happen much today, that we become, as the old saying was, so heavenly bound that we're no earthly good. I don't know if that happens very much anymore, but that certainly was a problem in a previous time. I'd like it to be a problem now. So what are the things we can yield from the universe? Let me bear witness to. We can yield from the universe that it is the way that it creates new things. It's the way it brings new things into being. And it doesn't matter if it's the supernova, the death of a star that explodes and spills its guts out into the universe and new galaxies come. Then I know that I was born in the death of a star billions of years ago. I mean, literally, physically, I was born there, as were you. Sit with that. Think about that. We are so blessed. Go on TV, go YouTube, go anywhere. Look at a supernova. Look at it. Sometimes you find a black hole. Allow yourself to be immersed in it. And when you look out at the universe, my wife and I were watching a film by Bill Bryson, based on Bill Bryson's book. It was called A Walk in the Woods. And there's this one point where they fall down off this side of the mountain, and they fall into this cliff, and they have to stay the night there. And if you have never read the book, it's a wonderful book. The movie's pretty good. The book is wonderful. But they're there, and Bryson's character, played by Robert Redford, is looking up, and they're looking at the stars, and he and his friend Katz, they're looking at the stars, and they're talking about the wonder of it. And Katz says, I can see probably a million stars. And Bryson says, well, you can actually see about maybe 200,000. And Katz goes, well, then my eyes must be really good. And then Bryson begins to wax rhapsodically about how vast the universe is. And he says, and we're so small. But when you understand these principles and you really begin to embrace them, embody them, you don't feel so small anymore. You know, I think the entry point of being small is okay because it kind of creates humility. It helps kind of cut through some of the hubris. But honestly, I don't think heuristically it ultimately is useful. I think it's more useful to know that not only are you in the universe, you are the universe. So let me give an example of how this might work in someone's life. So imagine a person is going through some change. They've been in a relationship. And in this relationship, they were very much in love with this person. And then the relationship changes. And sometimes when relationships change, the relationship that we knew changes into something else. I always say that even when we say a relationship ends, it really hasn't ended, it's changed. You can't really ever be in relationship with anything or anyone, and then it's gone. It's that whole non-existence thing. It's changed. We change the way we look at it, we change the way we relate to it. But this person is practicing the three principles. And they realize out of this second principle that even within this great change, that this crisis, let's say this crisis of this relationship changing, going through a great change, a death, they realize that this crisis is seen through the eyes of oneness, is an opportunity to bring something new into being, something that has never existed in the universe before, and never will again. And they embrace this not from some moribund and morbid place, but they embrace it from the reality that this is the nature of life, this change, and it's painful, and it can hurt. But hurt is not harm, and pain is not suffering. And the suffering, the narratives we attach to the pain, that's something we can change. That's something we can use and work with the power of change, the creativity of change, to bring something new into being. But in order to do that, we must open ourselves up. The reason I read that quote from Robert Plant, is that it allows us to remain open to the call of love. You know, like the lions, swift and true, straight to my heart, love has come calling, and I'm back here again. I pour myself into a brand new start, glad to be falling for the beauty within. I love that line. Glad to be falling for the beauty within. I swell up with tears, well up with tears. Because that's it. When we really understand these principles, we open our minds and hearts to know that the love that I have given in this one relationship that now has changed is the love that I will give to a new one. And that I didn't lose anything, that there wasn't a loss to give my heart that way, because it opened me up to the depths and the ground of my being. And now I can pour this love out into a new shape, a new container. And we learn as adults that the love that we need is completely connected to the love that we give. You know, when we're kids, we have to show love. We have to teach our children how to be loving and give love. But as adults, man, if you right now in this moment, you're not experiencing love in your life, it's because you're waiting for it to come to you from the outside. But it never comes from the outside. It always comes from within. And if you can open your heart, if you can throw down your arms, throw down the walls of your defenses, and give your all, you become a soldier of love from one to the next. And you realize that all the love you need will start when you begin to give it. And so that's how this person lives out the second principle of oneness. They embrace the change, including the pain, the hurt. But they use that cauldron to cook sacred meal of their life.